From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The sorrow, heartache, and suffering connected with loss can leave a person paralyzed with grief. In Before and After Loss, a neurologist's perspective on loss, grief, and our brain, Dr. Lisa Shulman channels her personal encounters with bereavement into exploration of what takes place in the brain when we're grieving. Shulman discusses interpreting dreams, journaling, and introspection. She raises questions and draws conclusions about the cognitive effects of loss and how to recover.
I was startled to find so many aspects of it that I'd never expected. In particular, that it was more about this aspect of disorientation and loss of identity than it was about sadness and sorrow.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. The grief that accompanies a loss, whether the death of a family member, the disappearance of a job, even a divorce, can be intense. What happens to the brain during grief? Are there identifiable symptoms that are treatable? Are the effects of grief reversible? Dr. Lisa M. Shulman shares the answers she's worked through in her book called Before and After Loss, A Neurologist's Perspective on Loss, Grief, and Our Brain. Connecting her own experience of bereavement to her knowledge of neuroscience, the book looks at the interface between experiencing loss and grief and the search for emotional healing. The book was just voted one of the best Baltimore books of 2018 by Baltimore Magazine. Shulman is the Eugenia Brin Professor in Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders and the Rosalind Newman Distinguished Scholar in Parkinson's Disease at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. She's also director of the University of Maryland's Parkinson's Disease Movement Disorders Center. Dr. Shulman will speak tomorrow at the Ivy Bookshop, and now she's with us in studio. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you, Sheila. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's nice to have you. So this book is part memoir, part scientific inquiry, and part self-help resource. Why did you choose to compile it that way?
Well, that's a good question. In all honesty, I couldn't say I'm really comfortable with writing a memoir. It's not familiar territory for me, and that memoir part of the book really came from the journaling that I was doing during the time of my loss after my husband's death a number of years ago. And at that point, I wasn't planning to write the book. And it was in the course of my own self-discovery of researching the neurologic basis of my own experience that I came to the conclusion that I had something to offer that wasn't yet out there in this field.
Tell me a bit about your husband, Bill.
So Bill, some people know him as Bill Weiner, and others know him by his full name, William Weiner. And he was also a neurologist, and we both worked in the field of Parkinson's disease and movement disorders. He was very well known in the field, and he was chairman of the Department of Neurology at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. His work and his patients and the department and the School of Medicine were extremely important to him.
Early, within the first few pages of the book, in the terms of this disorientation, you talk about facing after your husband's very serious cancer diagnosis, loss of him, loss of us, and loss of your own identity. So you're looking at all of those in a way that sort of sets you off balance.
There were so many things about the experience of loss that were completely unexpected to me. And that's another thing that really catapulted me to write the book, because I thought, as a woman in her 60s. Number one, that I've had enough experience that I would understand what this was about. But even more so as a neurologist, caring for people with serious neurologic disorders. I was counseling people who were going through serious loss. And it wasn't until I was in this situation that I was startled to find so many aspects of it that I'd never expected, in particular that it was more about this aspect of disorientation than it was, and loss of identity, than it was about sadness and sorrow. As far as the quote that you made right there, I think that that was yet another surprise, because it wasn't until I was able to reflect on things that I realized that there were these three different losses. The obvious one was the loss of my husband. But then there is the loss of who we were together, because we were a close, you know, an intimate pair.
Well, you worked together as well.
Exactly. So we lived our life together in all aspects. And then finally, the loss of who I was, because my own self-definition was so very wrapped up in this relationship that in the, not just the early months, but for quite some time, I was searching to even get and connect with what my choices in life would be, because I'd never had to contemplate that.
That's University of Maryland neurologist and author Dr. Lisa Shulman on the record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're speaking about her book, Before and After Loss, A Neurologist's Perspective on Loss, Grief, and Our Brain, which looks at the effect of grief and trauma on the mind, brain, and body. Her book was just voted one of the best Baltimore books of 2018 by Baltimore Magazine. About halfway through the book, you describe a moment after your husband died when you were in your kitchen about to make a meal for yourself. It was a turning point. Why? What did you experience?
Well, you know, months went by where I had this sense of disorientation, felt like I'd lost my bearings. I felt detached from things going on around me. I felt a fog of confusion that many people describe, although, weirdly, I was completely functional from day to day. I could do everything that I had always done at what appears to be high level. But I'm talking about in terms of my inner life and my personal life. And the actual circumstances of it were unclear to me until this very experience you're talking about. I was in the kitchen. I decided I would make a recipe, and so I took out a recipe book, and when I opened the book up to the recipe that I wanted to make, right next to the recipe was a scribbled note from my husband, Bill. And that's because we had a tradition of writing recipe notes. We always put the date and then a little note about what was going on in our lives next to a recipe. So I didn't expect to find it there. And it ended up that that note was from the day he had received his diagnosis. And he wrote a hopeful note. Mm-hmm. And when I saw it, and I was, of course, taken by surprise, but also it was very emotional to read his optimism at that moment, knowing how things had turned out. And then some time passed with no awareness, because the next thing I knew, I became aware I was standing in the kitchen holding a knife, and I was literally thinking, what am I doing here? And then when I saw the recipe, I remembered the whole sequence. And that was a pivotal moment, because I then suddenly realized, this has been happening to me when I encounter very emotional things where everything just sort of turns off for a while. I detach from what's going on and then was returning. And of course, that was part of the reason why I had this sense of fog. So at that moment in time, I really was motivated to find out what is going on in the brain after emotional trauma that causes something like this.
The neurologist in you clicked.
Exactly. I turned from the person who had who was in grief to the neurologist observing my own experience.
So you're talking about sort of losing track of time, losing track of yourself in time, dissociation. What exactly is dissociation?
You're exactly right. That was an example of dissociation. And dissociation is a protective defense mechanism of the brain. And what I learned is, you know, really how incredible our brain is in ensuring our survival when we experience emotional trauma. And this is actually an evolutionary adaptation because, you know, needless to say, emotional trauma is not unusual. And we have to be able to continue to function in spite of being subjected to emotional trauma and loss. So in dissociation, the brain actually senses that the emotional level of emotion is more than we're ready to handle. And therefore, this defense mechanism kicks in to protect us from something that is going to be overwhelming.
Well, you, in the book, compare the effects of grief on the brain with what is normally experienced during traumatic brain injury, TBI. We think of traumatic brain injury as physical damage. That's not usually how we think of grief.
That's an important point. And traditionally, traumatic brain injury has described physical brain injury. And now in recent years, we have encompassed in the definition of TBI, traumatic brain injury, milder forms of traumatic brain injury. For example, concussion, sports injuries, where people have a transient loss of consciousness or an alteration of consciousness, and then return to baseline function. And if you do imaging or if you examine them fully as a neurologist, no tests will show that any damage was done. But yet we understand now that concussion is not benign. So I am proposing that we should consider that emotional trauma should also be considered a form of traumatic brain injury, emotional traumatic brain injury, because it overlaps with so many features of mild traumatic brain injury, such as changes of cognition, changes of awareness, changes of sleep. And also, even if you take a look with what's known as a functional MRI that looks at areas of the brain that are activated, not structural changes, but activation of the brain, you can show that very similar brain areas light up whether you're talking about emotional pain or physical pain.
Dr. Lisa Shulman directs the University of Maryland's Parkinson's Disease Movement Disorder Center. We're talking about her new book, Before and After Loss, A Neurologist's Perspective on Loss, Grief, and Our Brain. It looks at the effects of grief and trauma on the mind, brain, and body. She's speaking tomorrow night, 7 p.m., at the Ivy Bookshop, 6080 Falls Road. Quick break here, and then we'll ask about how to work toward emotional restoration and healing after trauma and loss. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us on The Record.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm talking with Dr. Lisa Shulman about her book, Before and After Loss, A Neurologist's Perspective on Loss, Grief, and Our Brain. The book explores the interface between experiencing loss and grief and the search for emotional healing. It was just voted one of the best Baltimore books of 2018 by Baltimore Magazine. We're speaking in advance of Dr. Shulman's talk tomorrow night at the Ivy Bookshop on Falls Road. So we talked about how grief can impact the brain in ways similar to traumatic brain injury. Are the changes that occur in the brain function as a result of grief or emotional trauma, are they reversible?
They are. One of the things that I learned that I found very encouraging is that there are ways to calm the parts of the brain, particularly the part of the brain known as the amygdala, which is known as the fear center, and is on overdrive. And there are two important ways, which in the book I talk about as a principle of immersion and distraction.
Immersion and distraction.
Yes. Immersion means consciously going down the difficult path of being exposed to some of these disturbing memories and emotions to resurface what the brain has suppressed. I talked before about those moments in the kitchen where the brain was suppressing information, and that's why
you just blanked for some number of minutes.
Exactly. So the way to reverse that is to reconnect with the kinds of disturbing and difficult memories and emotions so that I'm more comfortable with that. And that can be done with many things. It can be in more traditional ways, as people do, seeing a counselor, going to a support group, reading a book, or it can be through what I found most valuable was journaling. But there's the other part of it. I said it was immersion and distraction because it's also important to take the time to be with friends, to do the things you like to do, because both of those things are going to start to quiet down this fear center that's on overdrive and remodel the neural pathways that have been rewired to be too easily to be triggered.
When you talk about three principles to heal the mind, the third is opening the mind to new possibilities. What exactly do you mean that to focus on?
Well, I think that the first principle is subconscious conscious integration, and that is what we talked about before, reconnecting to what is in the subconscious. The second, immersion distraction. And as you move through that and start to be more at peace and emotionally more restored, then it's time to open the mind to possibilities, to the possibilities of what your life should bring now, because you're in this extremely different circumstance after loss. You know, the life you had planned and the way you were living your life is gone. And there is a time, of course, for focusing on that fully. But then there is a time to start thinking about how am I going to build or compose a new life for myself? And it takes a long time to figure that out.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with neurologist and author Dr. Lisa Shulman about Before and After Loss, A Neurologist's Perspective on Loss, Grief, and Our Brain. The book looks at the effects of grief and trauma on the mind, brain, and body and offers paths toward emotional restoration. Shulman is also co-author of the reference book Parkinson's Disease, A Complete Guide for Parents and Families. You write a lot about dreams. Analyzing one's dreams, sort of interpreting them, the neurology involved. Talk about the role of dreams for someone who is grieving.
You know, I was searching for ways to illustrate the concept of how the brain suppresses material into the subconscious. And at one point, I suddenly had an aha moment, and I thought, oh, yeah, I've been keeping this dream journal, because many people, after they experience emotional trauma, have much more frequent and vivid dreams. And that was, I've always dreamt, but this was a very singular period of time. So I was writing these dreams down, and I thought, well, that's it. I have to go take a look at those dreams, because that is the road to the subconscious. Sigmund Freud said exactly that. Your dreams do not reflect other routine things in life that you're comfortable with. Instead, after emotional trauma, the dreams reflect the disturbing emotions and memories that cannot be filed away. Some people refer to it, what our dreams are about or our sleep is about. It's like a big filing system where all the memories of our experiences of the day and this period in our life are being filed to connect with previous experience. So, of course, what's going to happen when you have experiences that doesn't connect with any previous experience because it's so traumatic and so hard to even digest? What happens is that material ends up in our dreams because it was never filed away. The key thing being what I learned, the healing aspect of interpreting your dreams comes from the mindful work of trying to interpret it and coming to various conclusions. Finding the exact meaning or the real meaning isn't the goal, really. The goal is making one's own interpretations.
You also write a lot, and you've mentioned it several times, journaling. Talk about what journaling provided for you in your process of restoration.
Journaling is very unique because, for one thing, when we're feeling fearful and very, very sorrowful, all these things are just rolling around in our minds. And there is something reassuring to seeing it as concrete words on a page. It actually takes what seems amorphously overwhelming, and you have to find words, and now it has become sort of more of a thought that is concrete, right? And then there's lots of things about it that are quite unique. You can go back and read it again the next day, the next month, the next year, and you can annotate it as you have new views on the topic. And it's the one thing you can do where you can get your emotions out in a completely unfiltered form. Because no matter who you're speaking to in life, there's a certain aspect where you're editing yourself, so that you don't sound silly, crazy, or boring, redundant. But in your journal, you can write it any way you want. And I think that is the best way. It's just your raw feelings.
The title of the final chapter is Emotional Restoration. Do you think you've achieved that?
I think that I'm working on it, and I think I'll probably always be working on that. You lose something that is just simply invaluable. And so, it's not that there's ever a time where you come to terms with that. Instead, it's that I can now see the recipe note or other memories, and I don't have that experience of loss of time or dissociation. Instead, there has been enough emotional restoration where I can tell my own life story, and I can integrate what happened into that life story. But one of the key things I think that is comforting is that I don't really think the word closure applies at all. Instead, it's a finding a way to continue the bonds with people we cared about and to learn from it and be all the wiser.
Thank you for this conversation and thank you for this book.
You're very welcome, Sheila. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Dr. Lisa Shulman connects her own experience of bereavement and her background in neuroscience in her book, Before and After Loss, A Neurologist's Perspective on Loss, Grief, and Our Brain. The book looks at the effects of grief and trauma on the mind, brain, and body and offers paths toward emotional healing. Dr. Shulman will speak tomorrow night, Wednesday, January 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Ivy Bookshop at 6080 Falls Road. She'll be joined in conversation by Litza Williams, one of the founders of What's Your Grief?, a blog that focuses on the exploration of grief. We have a link to the book and to more information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.